You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world, and we welcome our new listeners across Russia. Lovely to have you on board. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and so is Maddie, who joins me from King's Cross, or, I don't know, Potts Point. You know, Maddie, welcome to the show. What is this? You know, I get confused between, is King's Cross, like, we know what King's Cross is, but is it part of Potts Point as a suburb?
So how it works is King's Cross is actually a road formation, which actually forms the Union Jack. And the whole area got known as King's Cross, but it was changed to Potts Point probably about, I don't know, about 5-7 years ago, but don't quote me on that one.
Yeah.
So it's one in the same.
Yeah, I just find it really interesting. And if you're listening in the UK, King's Cross in Sydney is not unlike King's Cross in London, where I lived for 3 years. It's a place of fun. There's lots of prostitutes there. It's down and dirty, and I just love it. You know, back in the 1950s, Maddie, it was very bohemian. You know, the writers would go to King's Cross and, you know, the playwrights for theatre. Do you know about that at all?
Yeah, I do. And it was a big hub for anyone that was in the artistic field back then. And then slowly through the 60s and 70s it changed. And now it's sort of changed again. So the official Potts Point area, which is really around the corner from Darlinghurst Road, that is now all boutique shops and fine dining restaurants.
Gentrified, would you say?
Very gentrified. So if you're a snob, you say you live in Potts Point. If you're me, you say you live in King's Cross.
Okay, fair enough. I get you on that one. Yeah, it's interesting, that road that you mentioned between Oxford Street and King's Cross. What was that road you just mentioned?
Darlinghurst Road, yeah.
Yeah, I used to, you know, back in the early 90s, when I was in my late 20s and early 30s, I would socialise in Oxford Street. But from time to time, you know, do the nightclubs, that kind of thing, I would walk up that road, and I had a girlfriend who lived on that road, so I'd stop off at her place and then drag her out to King's Cross. But I always preferred Oxford Street. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, Oxford Street was always probably safer and more fun experience than Darlinghurst Road and the Cross. That was probably, Darlinghurst and the Cross were always sort of filled with slightly darker characters.
Yes, to say the very least. I really didn't spend a lot of time in King's Cross because, you know, in Darlinghurst, especially in the early 90s, I spent my whole weekend at the Exchange. In Oxford Street, my best friend was gay, and I think we've talked about this before, the girls in gay nightclubs are so much nicer, sorry to everyone, you know, in mainstream nightclub Sydney, but we're talking the early 90s, and it was a lot of fun. You know what, talking of such things, I just realised, you know, my girlfriend's she has two gay brothers. And one of them just called me up. He's down here on Bondi Beach partying before he goes to what's called the Mardi Gras, which I used to go to all the time. Did you?
Yes, most definitely. I've been in the parade about 8 times.
So I was in it once.
I have, Henry. Yeah, I've definitely been in it. I've been on floats. I've walked it. I've done marshalling, keeping all the people behind the barricades.
I did the Marshall thing too, but I had to take an ecchi to deal with it. Seriously, I don't care. I don't mind saying that. We were young.
I had to do that later, you know, after. Otherwise, I wouldn't have kept on standing at the dance party.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in all fairness, I did it sort of about half an hour before I finished my marshal duty, which was hilarious, by the way. A lot of fun. And I think that we got some cheap drinks or something out of this. And we go to this bar afterwards where the actual party was. And I think Kylie Minogue was on. How about them apples?
Yes, I actually remember that party well.
You were there at the same time as me.
I was, and I used to go to the exchange about the same period that you used to as well.
You're 9 years younger than me, I think. I'm 61, so I'm guessing you're 53 or something.
Yeah, I am. I'm 53.
Excuse the abrupt question, but are you gay?
Camp is a row of tents at a Boy Scouts jamboree.
So do you, I should let our listeners know we both have cancer, but we've got other things to talk about as well. Do you still, you mentioned the last time we talked on air, that you really enjoy dancing.
That's correct.
That's never really changed with you, despite, the situation you and I are in terms of medically, I guess.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, when I was first diagnosed and released from hospital, I'd spent time in rehab and I came out on a walking frame. I'd gone from a wheelchair to a walking frame to a walking stick. And that's actually, I was on a walking stick when I first went back to clubbing with my friends. So I wasn't a particularly good look, but I really didn't care because I was there to be with my mates. And now, yeah, I was out last weekend with a really close group of friends, and we were out for four or 5 hours. Not like my younger days when I could stay out all night or all weekend,
Yes, and that's
but
got nothing to do with cancer whatsoever. It's called age.
that's exactly right.
But you know what? I find that, if I do get myself in a situation where it's loud, this has got nothing to do with cancer, but it's just that as I got older, I thought, I can't even hear what people are saying. I mean, is that the sign of someone who's really just getting old and boring?
No, because I remember back in the late 80s, early 90s when there was a very, very famous gay bar called the Albury Hotel in Sydney,
I know
and
as well.
it used to be so loud that everybody in the group, didn't matter whether you were 18 or 80, we all used to sign language to each other because it was the only way you could have a conversation because the music was so loud.
You could sign language, or you just made up your own?
We made up our own.
Yeah,
Some
like you. Sorry,
of us could sign, but yeah.
Just like put your finger up in the air and go one, and they know me, that means one beer or one. I early in the piece, earlier on in the night, myself and my gay friend, we'd fall asleep in my flat, which was in Glebe in the inner west of Sydney, and we purposely slept in the afternoon because we knew we were going to be up all night, and we would go in and at about 9 p.m. and have a couple of beers and thinking, and then we'd take a pill, ecstasy. And all of a sudden, it was gin and tonics for the rest of the night because beer wasn't going to cut it. It was just too filling. You know what I mean? What did you drink?
Back in my early days, because I didn't really drink in beer, it used to make me quite hammered and throw up quite easily. So I actually used to drink quite girly drinks. There was the Fluffy Duck, and if I was on a budget, it would be peach or peppermint schnapps in lemonade or ginger ale.
Ginger ale. What I found was, on the likes of ecstasy and to be honest with you, some amphetamines, but I never, use needles or anything. I just, took them orally. And I would find that I was not even interested in drinking. I would drink water sometimes, or drink coffee because I was so upbeat, and I'd go to one of those all night sort of cafes in Oxford Street where everyone was off their faces, and some were stoned and they're stuffing their faces with food. Alcohol really wasn't a big player at that period in my life,
I think for those people that were into the alternative drug scene, and I'll call the drug scene alternative, it was one of those things that most people that were on ease and stuff, you didn't drink a lot of alcohol because it just made you really messy, unless you were on drugs like coke and stuff, and then you could obviously keep on drinking that. But that tended to be most of the straight boys used to have more lines of coke during the night so they could drink more.
Yeah, you know what? You know what's really annoying? A friend of mine dragged us out of the Exchange in Oxford Street to go to this party on the North Shore of Sydney. And we went to the party, and everyone was drunk, and we were high on these other drugs. And they just were revolting to us. Revolting. You know what I mean? Because they were acting stupid. They were drunk. They were disorderly. We were completely switched on, and we just left the party after 10 minutes. We just couldn't handle it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, you thought you were switched on. You were probably just messing in a different way, Henry.
Look, you know, I'm the first to admit that. But the thing is, we were very attentive to detail, shall we say. And
of course.
As you do on these kind of drugs. And we just didn't have any tolerance for drunk, fumbling people. And you're right, we were no better in any moral respect. But it's funny, I just didn't have the patience to deal with these people.
Yeah, I think, look, you know, being off your face on drug and being off your face on alcohol is very different. Mm. And I think, you know, when you get to that stage that you're so off your face on alcohol, you become a little bit more messy and belligerent. And where usually when you're on drugs, especially back in the 80s and 90s, probably up to the 2000s, most drugs were quite happy drugs back then.
They were termed that to the chagrin of the government. They didn't like, you know, party drugs, I think they call them as well.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, you only have to look now the way that the scene has changed and the drugs that people take now, which have really...
Ice,
yeah.
Terrible, just, I mean, terrible drug.
Awful drug. Really awful drug. And it changes people.
Yeah. I don't know anyone who's had ice, but, you know, I've seen enough of, you know, I've read enough about this drug. And it's sad to think, you know, when we hung around the Exchange in Oxford Street, that it was really quite innocent, wasn't it, Maddie?
It was, and there was a different kind of tolerance, because back then being gay was still not that accepted. I mean, it was only really 87 when I came out. I was only 17.
Yeah.
You know, it was only 10 years since the first Mardi Gras, and things were still, you know, there were periods where people would drive buses up and down Oxford Street and Darlinghurst Road and jump out and gay bash and do terrible things.
And there's lots sorry to interrupt you. There's lots of reports that have come out recently from gay, you know, here in Bondi, off the cliffs up in North Bondi. You know, there was a gay guy was thrown off a cliff. Another one was murdered on the North Shore of Sydney. And these are historical events that the cops never let go. And they got these people, you know, 30 years later.
Yeah, it's very true, Henry. And there was actually a spate of bashings and murders along the cliffs of Bondi. It was something that I think the police at the time didn't handle particularly well, and that's public opinion. That's not just mine.
Oh, of course.
It's something now, you know, that it's been seen in a different light, and now we do have people that, you know, have followed through and got justice for those people.
Too late for so many people, Maddie, you know, too late. The cops, you know, it's all about the timing of, you know, the time back in the 80s. And, you know, on that subject, the Exchange was a refuge for gay people, and many clubs in Oxford Street, which was a predominantly gay social area, and a safe area to walk around during the day holding hands with your boyfriend or your girlfriend if you're a girl, that kind of thing. The thing about the Exchange now, which I haven't been to, but I know people who go there, the thing that's happened in recent times is that it's merged. You know, we don't have to call it a gay nightclub anymore because, thankfully, everything, you know, gay people and straight people have assimilated socially, and it doesn't, there are still gay nightclubs, of course, but the Exchange is not really one of them because everyone's welcome and it's not an issue like it was in the early 90s. You know what I mean?
That's true. And also, too, the Exchange back in the late 80s, early 90s was never actually a gay bar. It was a straight alternative on the edge fringe bar. So if you were a gothic, if you were a punk, if you were gay or bi or trans or whatever, you all mixed together and you were all tolerant because you were all actually left of field. So it wasn't a specific gay bar. There were specific gay bars on Oxford Street.
Yes.
The
Taxi Club? Taxi Club.
Yes, Taxi
Club. Oh, that was a nasty place.
Well, there again, I loved it. Depended on what level you were on, Henry, because if you went to the first floor, it was all straight and all pokies. If you went to the dance floor on the second level, yes, it was all drag queens, trannies, and all the boys that like to go home with them.
And of course, then the courthouse on the corner, of course, upstairs. Oh, my God. Upstairs was just hilarious. I can't remember the name of that bar, but I had many a good 5 a.m., you know, after doing the exchange, going upstairs, and I would just meet all these crazy people. It was just a fantastic venue, you know.
Yeah, the courthouse. I always used to think the courthouse was for the dregs on a Sunday when nothing else was open.
Probably.
Yeah, it kind of was when I used to go there. But you're right; it was always a very eclectic mix of people.
Now, I want to ask you, you know, I don't prep interviews unless they're about politics around the world, because you kind of have to do that because things change all the time. I have no idea where you're from, Maddie. Are you from Sydney? And if so, whereabouts in Sydney?
Yeah, I was born in St. George Hospital, and I'm actually adopted. So I'm a bit confused now. I grew up with a foster family who adopted me later in life. And so I grew up on the Northern Beaches.
Whereabouts? I'm just intrigued.
So I started life in Belrose, Frenchs Forest. And then when my parents divorced, I ended up in Manly, Fairlight, Collaroy.
Oh, look, this is, gosh, this is interesting. My girlfriend is from Frenchs Forest, and she's one of seven children, and they're all, you know, all over the place, but some of them are still living in Frenchs Forest. So I'm very familiar with Frenchs Forest. It's Upper North Shore in Sydney, if you're listening overseas. And I always find, you know, you live in the eastern suburbs, so do I. It's a very different world going across that Sydney Harbour Bridge and entering into North Sydney for a start. And then you go further up north. And I often find it's like a different country. It's a very different psych, isn't it?
Look, I one of the things I love about living in Sydney is you can go in half an hour in any direction, up to an hour in any direction from Sydney Centre, and you're in a completely different country, in a completely different world.
Yes, it's so true. If you go to the western suburbs, a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, exactly. But one thing I will say about the Northern Beaches in particular is they call it the Insular Peninsula. Yes. And they call it that for a reason.
Yes.
Most people tend to sort of like stay there, marry there, live there, work there, and don't cross the bridge.
Well, you can take the boy out of Belrose or Frenchs Forest, but can you take them out of the boy, Maddie?
Oh, most definitely.
I think you probably have good reason living in King's Cross, Acker Potts Point. Now, you mentioned that you're adopted. You know, my stepmother got pregnant at the age of 18, and she's Irish. And the laws change in Ireland about 10 years after everyone else's laws change because of the Catholic Church running the country for so many decades. And she reunited with her child, which wasn't possible. Her child found her, and she's 83, and she's really pleased about this. And she's getting to know that she's got grandchildren, blood-related grandchildren. Have you ever wanted to find your parents?
All right, so it's a really strange story. But in the foster family I was in, there were two girls that were already foster children that would never be returned to their parents. And when I turned five, the similarities in our features and mannerisms were too much. So my family pressed it, and it turned out they were actually my biological half sisters.
Whoa!
One of them was had men, was mentally disabled, and the other one had personality problems. So they both ran away back to our birth mother. So I have seen photos of her, and I do know of her, but she had a very sad life. She was a chronic alcoholic.
Your mother, your real mother.
My real mother is my adopted mum. My birth mother.
Oh,
my
sorry. Mom, that's sorry. All right. You got me there. You got me there.
My biological mother, yeah, she had 9 children, and all but one was adopted out. They were all taken away for forms of abuse, or because they were being mistreated or neglected, or because she no longer wanted them. She had many different partners who were all alcoholics. A lot of them were abusive. So for me, I never really had the urge. Maybe when I was younger, I did, but I felt that it would be kind of a betrayal to my mum to follow up. And I have actually met 2 of my biological half-sisters as well, who were in the government system of care when I was in my mid-teens. And they also had, 2 of them were also mentally disabled as well, in different forms. And look, I just couldn't see the point of, my natural mother put me bashed and bleeding into a cab at less than 6 months old, and told a strange taxi driver to take me to a police station and never to return me. So for me, that's kind of enough to say that she's never really been interested. She's never reached out, and she's had opportunity to do so. So, yeah, for me, look, I'd like to know my actual background, because, obviously I don't necessarily look like my adopted family. I probably look a bit more mixed. But I've had a few hereditary and 1 congenital disease come up, so it would have been nice to know that history.
Medical
about my
history,
life.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, but other than that, I've actually got no desire, because I don't think it would actually serve any purpose for her or for me.
Okay, now, just a couple of questions regarding this. You mentioned that your birth mother had 9 children, and 8 of them were sent out to various places. What happened the 9th one, or the, you know, one of them?
She kept that child. That was her last child. And at the age of 9, she was drinking and smoking and living in a caravan park with the mother. That's the last I heard of her, so I don't know what's happened to her.
Right, and your father?
My birth father died of sclerosis of the liver in jail at about 49.
Oh, good Lord, you've got a rich history. It is interesting.
It writes itself, Henry.
Yeah, look, my parents separated before I was born. They must have got together one night. And I was born in 1962. And at 15 months, I was put into children's homes, which, I have fond memories of those children's homes. I was very protected, probably in the sense that you were protected by your adoptive family. Is that fair to say? Did you have a good childhood?
Next question. I had a very interesting childhood, and I've got to say that my adoptive family gave me a wonderful life that I would not have had, and opportunities I would not have had I stayed with my birth parents. There was definitely trouble and a lot of drama in the family I was adopted into as well. However, I'm very close to my nieces and nephews through my adopted brothers, and you know, I do have a great sense of family, so I can't say that it was terrible. I can't say it was perfect.
Yeah, and nothing is. And you know, it's interesting, you know, from my own perspective, being brought up in children's homes, two of them, and one boarding school, I have to say that I feel blessed and lucky. I didn't miss, you know, it wasn't until I got to boarding school, which was a kind of a wealthy school in the west of Ireland for Protestants in a majorly Catholic state, and they all were rich. You know, their fathers and mothers were rich farmers, and they were entitled, if you like, to use a very millennial term. And here was I coming from a children's home and sponsored by people who sponsored the children's home. That's why I got into this really good school, and I'm very thankful for that. But I was suddenly, at the age of 12, which is a very impressionable age, very aware of who I was. It kind of hit me, because up to that, I just accepted the fact I never had parents, and it didn't bother me, you know, until I had this kind of peer pressure thing going on. But it sounds like, you know, you sound like you had a decent childhood.
Look, I did. I went to private school for high school as well. I actually went to a Catholic college, even though I'm Church of England. And, you know, that was like I got picked on at school mercilessly because I was the soft kid that they used to punch, and I'd cry rather than punching them back because that wasn't my nature.
Yes.
And I, like you, I suppose it was a wake up for me in the respect of, because we weren't an affluent family. I came from a single parent family by that stage, where everyone else, you know, they had the latest piece, you know, computers at home, computers all of a sudden came out, and everybody had one except for me, things like that. So yeah, you know, look, I learned the hard way that I came from a different socioeconomic background, but you know, you're a child, you survive, you're resilient.
Yeah, you know, I just want to ask you about adopting children. You have to go through a lot of criteria, a lot of red tape, and you have to show that you are going to be a responsible set of parents to an adopted child. You mentioned that your adopted family, your father and your mother separated.
Yeah, when I was four, they divorced when I was five, and I was actually still regarded as a state of the ward until I actioned my own.
You mean a ward of the state?
I guess a ward of the state.
I love correcting people. Sorry, Maddie.
That's right. I'll blame it. I'll blame that on chemo brain.
I no doubt you'll get me back. Anyway.
So I actioned my own adoption when I was 15.
Mm-hmm.
So up until then, I was ward of the state, and basically I had regular check-ins with Department of Social Security and Social Services and Family and Community Services. So I was monitored right through my childhood.
From St. Kilda to King's Cross, 13 hours on a bus. I press my face against the glass and watch the white lines rushing past. And all around me felt like all inside me, and my body left me, and my soul went running. Have you ever seen King's Cross when the rain is falling soft? I came in on the east bus from Oxford Street, I cut across. And if the rain don't fall too hard, everything shines just like a postcard. Everything goes on just the same. Fair weather friends are the hungriest friends. I keep my mouth well shut, I cross open hands. I wanna see the sun go down from St. Kilda Esplanade, where the beach needs reconstruction, where the palm trees have it high. I give you all of Sydney Harbour, all that land and all that water, for that one sweet promenade. I give you all of Sydney Harbour, all that land and all that water, for that one sweet promenade.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Australia to the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, and so is Maddie in King's Cross or Potts Point. I can't decide. Maddie, what do you do with, like, what kind of movies do you watch? Are you interested? I'm a movie buff. I watch very, very edgy films. I'm not interested in Hollywood, to be honest with you. What about you?
Look, I watch a lot of mainstream. I love murder mysteries. I'm a massive Agatha Christie fan. And,
oh, really?
So, you know, yeah, I've done myself in, right?
okay. I like, you've come I like out. You have see. Come out.
What, again? I thought I came out when I was 17. Come on, Henry.
Yes, I know. Anyway, Agatha Christie, my girlfriend's a writer, and she's obviously a reader as well, and she just loves Agatha Christie. Do you read the books? Do you watch the TV series?
TV series, movies. I have read some of the books as well. I think she was very clever and quite ahead of her time, really.
Mm. Of course, yeah. I don't read. I'm really lazy like that. I can read online, but I can't read a book. I just don't have the attention span. I'm big on horror movies, but the problem is I'm not into gory movies. I'm into psychological horrors, such as The Exorcist, of course, which is the most famous. Has that ever interested you, horror movies?
Yeah, I love a good scare, to be honest. I love horror movies. As far as reading, I was into Anne Rice and like the Vampire Chronicles and that entire series. I have a really mixed bag. It's not the same with my taste in music. With the exception of hard rock, basically I like just about everything.
Mm. Yeah, I don't like hard rock either. It's interesting because I actually, when I wake up, I listen to Indian relaxation music. This is how I wake up, or classical music. I love jazz, and I think we've talked about this on these airwaves before. And the thing is, I don't actually know anything about music. I just like it, and I don't want to know about it. You know what I mean? The way people are fanatical about, you know, Chopin, for instance, which my girlfriend loves classical music and she knows all about it. I know nothing about it and I don't want to. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, I mean, I appreciate jazz, opera, classical, pop, country and western.
I love country music when I'm driving. You know,
yeah.
The thing about country music, Maddie, is that I was just saying this when we were driving up the country a couple of months ago, that all these country songs are very depressing. I mean, I love country music. All the songs sound the same to me, but they're always about my man left me and, you know, that kind of thing. Dolly Parton stuff, you know.
Well,
Jolene.
To quote the movie The Bodyguard, it's another Somebody Did Somebody Wrong song.
Yes, and they're all the same.
They're all the same. They're all about broken hearts, or they're about their pickup truck.
Well, the pickup truck's important, especially if you're listening in America. I just, you know, with all this, with movies, I am quite open-minded. Some Hollywood stuff I like, But I sort of, as I get older, I'm you know, because a lot of movies are now streaming online, which with websites like Plex, which are free, except they hammer you with ads, which is kind of annoying. They are doing a lot more edgy films. And this is where I'm at in my head space, I guess, at the moment. But you mentioned that you are quite okay with Hollywood productions.
Yeah, something I've actually really gotten into is a channel that we have here in Australia is SBS, and they do a lot of world movies.
Yes.
So, and also too, I find that rather than watching crappy TV series, I tend to watch a lot of documentaries now as well.
Mm. SBS is fantastic, isn't it? I mean, just to explain to our international audience, SBS, Special Broadcasting Services, I think is the name of that organisation. They, here in Australia, obviously, like Britain and America, we've got a lot of people from a lot of countries, some who were not born here, many of who, you know, immigrants who were not born in this country, just like myself, and of foreign languages, you know, and SBS is a service that I've never seen in Britain when I lived there, or in Ireland, or in France, or any other country. It really is a unique kind of service, isn't it?
It really is, and it's wonderful because you get to watch movies from all around the world, from all different budgets, from mainstream to indie films to something that was done in the backyard on a camcorder. There's a lot of films with there's a lot of films with subtitles. So if you're not into reading subtitles, it can be a bit much. They do a lot now also too with Indigenous Aboriginal films. And
yes.
I think that's really wonderful as well, telling those stories, because I think it's something that in Australia they don't get told enough.
Do you think, and I'm just going all over the place here with this conversation because I can, with regard to Aboriginals, you know, I've seen Aboriginals, you know, I've seen footage on television, black and white TV from the 1970s here in Australia, shown by SBS, of course, of Aboriginals in chains. And I'm talking the 1970s, not the 30s or 40s. It's horrific. Do you think things have really changed, or are we just pretending they have?
I think it's just, it's, I think it was Gloria Steinem that said that in order for feminism, and I'll loop this in with everything else that we're talking about, in order for feminism to be truly activated, it would take 200 years from the start date to, for it to be totally integrated. And I think it's the same with gay rights. I believe it's the same with Indigenous rights in Australia. I think it will take a very long time for it to there to be a total equality and a total fair balance and acknowledgement. I think things are gradually getting better. I think the recent referendum that we had in Australia for the voice, I think unfortunately that came down, that was completely distorted because it was about multiple things.
Yes.
And unfortunately there was a lot of fear mongering, and so it became focused that we were a bunch of racists. Unfortunately, I don't think it passed because we're racist. I think it didn't pass because there was fear mongering about what the voice itself was going to do in our government and parliament. And you know, so that's a sign that we still have a long way to go for acceptance, acknowledgement, and equality.
Yes, and sorry, Maddie, just to explain, the voice was a referendum. The first, I think, since the referendum to work out if we wanted to be a republic or not, which was also badly worded by the then Prime Minister John Howard in 1999. This referendum, just to explain, was to give Aboriginals and Torres Strait Islanders a voice in Parliament, and it failed miserably. Misinformation, right-wing media such as Channel 7, 9 and 10, which are commercial networks here in Australia, especially Channel 9, completely biased against it. The ABC tried their best, but the whole thing was failed miserably because it wasn't people... We didn't know what it entailed, when it really was quite simple in the end, wasn't it, Maddie?
It was really simple, and I think they did make it clear that there was no dominant structure for what it was going to be. It was just as simple as it was going to be community leaders, people involved in the Aboriginal community, all coming together to have a consistent voice, no matter whether Labor, Liberal, or whoever was in Parliament, to consistently go through the problems within their community that needed addressing and keep it on an even keel. Unfortunately, it became about a whole heap of different things. And also too, there were, unfortunately, there were Aboriginals on the Liberal Party side that were against it and spoke out against it and used a lot of fear against it. And it just, the water got so muddy. I think, unfortunately, even though it probably should have passed and it was the right thing to do because it was an acknowledgement of that community in this country, that they were the forerunners of this country long before a white man ever settled it. I think, unfortunately, it just got lost.
Yeah, it did. And I would like someone to carve up Queensland and send it out to sea.
I've been wanting that for long before the referendum.
Yeah, me too. I mean, goodness knows, they affect the elections in this country at 13 very painful years of the right-wing Liberal Party running this country, and it was painful on every level. You know, we talk about Aboriginals. The truth is, if you go up to the Northern Territory, you see a lot of Aboriginals who are addicted to sniffing petrol or gas, if you're listening in America, and they are drinking a lot of alcohol. I know when I went to Alice Springs and Ayers Rock, otherwise known as Uluru, that we could go into a pub and buy a drink. Of course, we were tourists from Sydney, but they couldn't. So they've stopped Aboriginals buying from bottle shops and also going into pubs. But it doesn't really make any difference.
I'd agree. And I also think that we've got to remember that when white men colonised Australia, besides the terrible things they did to the Aboriginal community, like poisoning water holes, raping their women, taking over their prime feeding lands, we also introduced alcohol to them, and
yes, that's a good point.
There was an article I read many years ago, and I don't want to be quoted on this because I'm probably going to get the specifics wrong, but they were saying that Maori culture from New Zealand, Australian Aboriginals, and I think there were Pacific Islanders, they all have a different variation, but they don't actually have the enzyme in their body to break down alcohol, which is why it affects them so bad.
I was going to mention that. That is a medical reason, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's a legitimate reason. And I think that's what we also have to look at, is we introduced a poison to them that they can't digest.
Yes.
In order to make them docile, so that we could do what we wanted with this country. And
gosh, that's really dark, Maddie, but it's true.
Well, the truth usually is dark, if you're going to be 100% honest. Yes. But you have to be 100% honest in order to move on and to make a difference. Because if you're not 100% honest, you can never have a truthful conversation with someone, and there's never going to be a point where you reach an understanding or an equality, because there's always going to be misconceptions and misnomers on both sides. So you have to be brutally honest, and brutal honesty is quite dark. It's quite horrible. But in order to move forward, I think that's what you have to have, those conversations.
You got to pay the price, you know, you really do. And, you know, I just want to switch subjects yet again, because this is what I feel like doing. Sorry, Maddie.
That's all right.
It's not actually my show. We've got correspondents all over the world. It's their show, trust me.
From Bondi Beach in Sydney to the world, Bondi Tunes International.
if you've just joined us, I am talking with Maddy here in Sydney. He's in King's Cross. We'll call it King's Cross, okay. I'm in Bondi, and we're talking about everything. I wanted to talk about cooking, because I cooked macaroni cheese this afternoon, because tomorrow I'm celebrating, well, my girlfriend Caroline is celebrating her birthday and someone else's, one of her sisters, she's one of seven children, I get so confused. Anyway, there's two of their birthdays being celebrated, and also the fact that we've been together exactly 30 years to the day, which happens to be tomorrow. So I made, well, it's about the only thing I can cook, macaroni cheese. Do you cook?
Okay, so firstly, congratulations to you and Caroline. Happy birthday to Caroline. I do. I live in a studio apartment, so I don't do a lot of major cooking like I used to. Also, too, since the diagnosis, I went through all the periods of, you know, not being able to eat and vomiting up every meal and all of the wonderful things that go with cancer.
Yes,
so
yes.
I do make meals, but I keep them fairly simple. So I'm more a salad and protein boy. Mm-hmm. I tend to make sort of the basic things, but I do like my sausages and mash, I will be honest.
Yes, me too, and a nice gravy with mint sauce in it. You see, what I find, and I, you know, we're trying not to talk about cancer here, but it does affect the fabric of your life. I find that I love the smell of roast chicken. I love the smell of all this, and even the taste, because my taste, I'm not on chemo anymore, at the moment anyway, and I've been off about 3 weeks, and I'm, you know, I still have nausea from eating, and it does hurt to eat because my cancer is in the esophagus. But I love the smell and the taste of food, but then trying to eat it is a whole different kettle of fish, excuse the pun.
Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, I went through a year and a half where I'd go out and I'd literally go out because I wanted to get out of the house because I was sick of always being in here or asleep or feeling crap. And I'd order a meal and because I was hungry, and then I'd take a smell of it and I'd literally have one mouthful and I'd have to like pay the bill and leave and like tell the kitchen that it was nothing wrong with the meal, it was me.
It's terrible, isn't it? Really terrible.
Really awful. It's just one of those. It's the price you pay for cheating death, right?
Yeah, fair enough. Now, look, before we go, I just want to get back to Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras here in Sydney, Australia, is one of the biggest in the world. There's another, obviously, many Mardi Gras around the world for many different reasons. This is known as, here in Sydney, as the gay and lesbian Mardi Gras. I don't know if that's the case in America. You might be able to advise me on that, whether it is, you know, a gay and lesbian Mardi Gras.
America have pride.
Okay, so same sort of thing.
Same, same, but different.
There's a motorbike brought to you by the people of King's Cross. Right, so it is Mardi Gras night, and it's a big night. It was a huge night for me back in the 90s, in the early 90s. Do you miss the fact that you're not getting, or are you taking part? Are you going to a pub? Are you going to, you know, celebrate this?
No, I'm quite happy to avoid crowds now, and because I have rods in my neck and stuff, and it's just like that amount of people, it just doesn't really float my boat anymore.
Yeah.
Look, I'll watch it on TV and I'll support everyone, and I think, you know, in a lot of ways it's for the younger generations, and, you know, I definitely took part when I was in my teens, 20s, 30s, 40s. But now I've kind of hit a pass in my life where it's not as important, because I'm also comfortable with who I am. I don't have to declare to the world that here I am, I'm Maddie and I'm the homosexual. I'm actually Maddie the person, and the fact that I happen to be gay is completely a side event.
Yeah, it's a kind of an age thing as well. You know, we don't want to be in these nightclubs with sticky floors because of spilt beer. And if I go back to the 90s, everyone was smoking. And, you know, I loved it. I had no problem with that at all. But you kind of, it is about age, really. You sort of grow out of that stuff. Do you have a partner at the moment?
No, I haven't had a partner for about 8 years.
Do you want one?
That's a very loaded question.
It is. That's what I'm here for.
Look, actually, just unfortunately, I'm going to have to bring it back to the old cancer. Unfortunately,
Sure.
I'm on so many medications that it actually has affected my sex drive and my ability to partake in those things. So even if I wanted a partner, the practicality of it's not really a viable option, number one. And number two, just before I was diagnosed, I started to get back out there on the single scene and put my foot back in the water. It'd been about 5 years since my relationship had ended at that stage, and then I was diagnosed, which just completely changed the demographic of my life. And now, I don't think it would be fair to ask somebody to take me on, with the fact that we don't know what the outcome's going to be. The fact that I'm still here is amazing. The fact that I'm doing
Yeah,
as
I
well as I
agree.
am is amazing. But it's really hard to say to someone, love me unconditionally, give me everything, but I could die on you tomorrow.
Yeah, no, that's so true,
It's not really a fair trade, I don't think. And
yeah.
to be honest, I'm quite happy on my own now. I'm very comfortable in it.
Yeah,
And
my next question to you, Maddie, was, are you a lonely person by nature? Because I'm not. I was single for, a couple of years. I had girls. I didn't have girlfriends. I just had girls. I was a prick, quite frankly, in my early 30s. And I was never lonely. I lived alone. Are you, some people just are needy and it's not their fault. And it's not a fault at all to be needy. You want someone to love. I'm lucky I've got someone for the last 30 years, exactly to the day tomorrow. You're not a lonely person. You don't sound, you, do you like your own company?
look, I enjoy my own company, but I also have amazing friends, and I have an amazing group of friends. So I've got lots of different people that I get to socialize with. And if I was lonely or depressed, I could pick up the phone and call. Probably I've got a list of 20 different people, and I've got different friends for different moods and different groups. I've also, I've got my mum who, I see every week on a Saturday. We
She's in her
spend the day
90s or
together.
something. She's quite elderly.
Yeah, she'll be 90 in June.
You see, this is good genes, Maddie.
Yeah, not mine though, unfortunately.
Oh shit. I forgot.
Yeah, no, I come from really crappy genes. So.
Oh, well, you're doing okay.
Yeah, so yeah, for me, I don't really get lonely. I'm very lucky. I catch up with people at least once a week, different people, not all the same, always the same. I also have people that live, really good friends that live in the area that I'll catch up for coffee with once a week. So I don't actually feel like I'm alone.
Yeah, and you're not, you don't certainly don't sound like a lonely person to me. I just want to mention that I went on air across Europe last night, right across Europe, and I was didn't want to do this, and I just want to say to you, because we both got cancer, that I didn't really want to do this, but because I've been on social media, because I'm a loudmouth, unlike you, I scream from the rooftops, and because I've been putting out a positive message, not because I want to, I'm just a realist, I just say it as it is. If I'm having a bad day, everybody knows about it, but generally speaking, I've been very positive, and a radio station in Europe which carries this very show, RTI in Slovakia, decided to interview me live at 11 p.m. my time, which is not exactly suitable, but it was a lot of fun to do. But I didn't want to do this interview because I didn't want to be the poster boy for cancer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, well, I was just talking about the issues I have, with intimacy. So, like, I was actually asked to be the poster boy for impotency through a cancer group. So, yeah, that went down really well, but I did it.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Well, so how did that, gosh, we got to go soon. How did that come about?
But I look, so there, it was actually three other people that had cancer. We all are members of a support group for rare cancers, and they came up with the idea that we should do well, they wanted to do some kind of podcast and talk about the into the cancer, into the abyss, and the things you don't talk about when you've got cancer. And
it spill was the beans kind of stuff, yeah?
And because there was four of us, it was divvied up into, and we were, you know, having very open and honest conversations. And I had mentioned about, you know, that was one of the things they don't tell you about cancer is that, you know, you get chemically castrated from all the drugs and, you know, as a man, becoming impotent's not a particularly great thing, especially if you're single looking for a partner. And so they latched onto that, that was something I could talk about because it wasn't a crossover on any of their points.
You're okay with that, yeah?
Yeah, look, you know how we were talking about brutal honesty a little bit before the really dark side of it. I think one thing I've learned through this whole experience and something I learned in the last 8 years, because I've had a lot of different things come up in my life, but, you know, one thing I've learned is if it's uncomfortable to talk about, if it's something you want to hide, it's probably something that needs to be said. Mm. So by being honest about it and open about it and public about it, and, you know, I've just done that worldwide now, right? is actually quite freeing because it's not that I'm trying to hide it anymore. It's something that I don't have to hold on to. So it's one less thing I have to worry about.
And it's probably a rhetorical question to ask you. This is due to cancer.
Yes, it is. And the thing is, if I have one conversation with someone, I'm having a conversation with you, and this goes around the world and one person is in a similar situation and goes, I'm not alone, which is actually what happened on that video conference, because the other three all turned around and they were women, but they all turned around and then started talking about their problems in intimacy with partners, etc. And they all said to me, and which is why they asked me to do it, was that they all thought they were alone. They thought they were the only people that were going through that and they were too embarrassed to talk to anyone about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And this is exactly, you know, why I went on the air with RTI in Slovakia, because I've a great deal of respect for them, because we had a lot of broadcast carriers dropping my show when I was diagnosed with cancer in July, 6 days after my birthday. I sort of shut down because I was in shock. And I'm sure you've talked to me about your experience when you first found out that you had cancer. And I shut the show down. Then about a month later, in the meantime, we lost five broadcast carriers. That's five radio stations just disappeared because we weren't providing current content or any content. But RTI stuck with me. They just played archival material. And my point to you is that I did go across Europe on radio to because I do have a good story. You know, it's a positive story. So I thought, just like yourself, you know, people will react. People listening, in your case, people responding to your conference call. It's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing, and it's worth doing, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, as I said to you, I think if you got a story to tell, and even if that story only touches one person and has a change on their life or how they feel about themselves and takes them out of a dark place, then you've achieved something amazing.
I totally agree. Maddie, we've achieved something amazing. It's 56 minutes and 16 seconds, and we were only going to do a 30-minute interview, but, you know, we got kind of carried away, and I'm so pleased we did. Thank you so much for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Henry, and good luck with everything, mate.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Very Real Radio. We'll be right back.
Henry O'Donovan.